This is the way to do it. You'd sing happy birthday twice if you want to. But you got to scrub those hands. You've got to interlace your fingers and scrub. Scrub your fingertips, you know, that touches everything from buttons to elevator buttons, everything else. Wash the back and the front of your hands. You're doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your family. You're doing it for the whole community to stop community spread. We have to keep each other safe in this very dire time. I'm Amy Goodman. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy, for that wise bit of advice. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Sain here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
How are you doing this week, Kyle?
I'm, you know, up and down, but overall really kind of motivated, feeling good.
Yeah. I've noticed you've been fixing things. And
well, things have slowly been coming together. A lot of plates spinning, that kind of thing. But and here I just have been trying to keep the glue that is remote programming together, which overall has been great.
Yeah,
as we've said,
we are remote.
We're happy. Yeah.
We're remote, in case it's not clear.
Down the road.
Yeah, down the road. We're not at the station. Virtually nobody is at the station. Very good reason for that, as hopefully we've imparted over the past few weeks. Hopefully we will continue to emphasize the importance of being careful and being smart. So a lot of that's going out of fashion, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, when I say I've been up and down, I would say there's a certain level of anxiety about everything everyone else is worried about. You know, my overall health, my family's health, my, you know, job, and other people I'm, you know, trying to catch up with, or that, you know, I'd really miss, you know, friends and acquaintances, and just logistics of living. It's so much slower in this weird world we're in. Everything takes a lot of time, cleaning and looking out for certain things, and you add to that this sort of impetus and urgency to reopen and get back to normal. Everybody wants back to normal, and it's kind of bringing around some more anxiety because, so, you know, if I let down my guard, what does that mean? You know, if other people are being stupid when things are quarantined and closed down, what's going to happen when we're relaxing more from that? And that just adds and compounds to the things I think I just mentioned were really, really sources of a lot of stress.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, everybody does want things to get back to normal. It's strange to see people treating that as a debating point, as if there are people who don't want things to go back to normal. Who out there wants to keep living like this? Raise your hand. I'd like to know. Who wants to not be able to socialize with people? Who wants to wear masks all the time? Who wants to have to line up to get food and be careful when you're in a grocery store? Nobody likes this. Nobody wants this. And the only reason we're doing it is because it's essential. It's necessary for us to survive at all. And I'm just struck by the people who are impatient and treating science, treating the medical community as if it's the other side of a debate. Well, yeah, you say this is that deadly disease that's going to kill all of us, and I say I want to live my life, and that means I know just as much as you. No, you don't know anything. You don't know what you're talking about. And unfortunately, when we give these people, I guess, an equal say, and that goes for politics, that goes for people on the street, that goes for anybody, and treat them as equals to somebody who has studied this and knows what they're talking about and has devoted their life to the science of medicine, what are we doing to ourselves? You know, I mean, it's interesting television for sure, but we are kind of writing a check that we're not going to be able to cash. Is that the right way to say that? We're basically signing our own doom. Yeah, I knew there was a pen involved somewhere.
Yeah, it's entertaining. Sort of lunacy that has such a high cost, and you know, everything we've been doing has been in a response and to mitigate and in anticipation of being able to do all of those things when things are truly less numerous as far as cases, as far as deaths, as far as you name it, and people have been doing an extraordinary job holding it together and supporting other people, looking out for other people. So it's just, it would be a shame to entertain this sort of false sense that what we've been doing hasn't been worthwhile, and that we're somehow jeopardizing and encroaching on people's freedoms and so on. It is something that we've been guided towards, and that has gotten to a point where we're actually seeing results, and it being foolhardy because people have a perception of the inability to go on. It's just a really bad time. I think I said that the other week. Let's not do this.
Yeah.
Not now. Not in this type of crisis. It's too contagious.
Yeah, you know, there are actually two different counterpoints here. The people who say that it's a complete waste of time, and the people who say, hey, it worked. We're done. Both of which are incredibly wrong. You know, today, if you listen to the briefing from the county executive, Steve Ballone, you'll hear him say that the numbers are going in the wrong direction again. They're going up. There are more people in hospitals than there were yesterday, 2 days in a row. That's bad. That's really, really bad. We saw results. We saw good results because we were being smart. And now that we've decided to give stupid a try, okay, we're seeing the results of that now too. It's really sad. You know, we talked about idiots and morons and imbeciles in other parts of the country. Well, guess what? They're here too. They're right here. You hear what happened in Commack last week? This is unbelievable. I'm actually going to play a piece from News 12 because they did such a good job covering what was going on. I just felt we had to share this to people in the rest of the world. This is what's going on in our backyard.
They gathered by the hundreds, holding flags, carrying signs, and shouting at the top of their lungs. Long Islanders who say their rights are being violated by the coronavirus shutdown.
It's unfair for the governor to decide who gets to work and who doesn't.
The protest happened this afternoon in Commack, most participants blatantly ignoring social distancing guidelines, and many refused to wear face masks, going directly against the governor's orders.
I've been reading that most of the time when you wear a mask 8 hours a day, you're more susceptible to hurting yourself than helping yourself.
Where did you get that?
On the internet. Look it all up. It's all there.
Suffolk police watched the demonstration but did not enforce social distancing. The county executive says those decisions are made on a case-by-case basis.
But despite protests like this, Governor Cuomo says the New York On Pause program will remain in effect until at least May 15th.
But many of these demonstrators say they can't wait that long, telling us they're more concerned right now about the economy than the potential health problems the virus could cause.
Are you at all concerned that this demonstration could actually spread coronavirus?
Every single person here is responsible for themselves.
If there were a vaccine for COVID-19, would you take it?
No, sir.
In Commack, Kevin VC News 12, Long Island.
So much to unpack there. Oh, my God. I mean, a convention of morons. I swear, I don't use that phrase lightly. But, my God, how stupid do you intend to be in one lifetime? These are people who are against the vaccine. They're against taking the vaccine. They think Governor Cuomo has no right to tell people what to do. He's the governor of the state. You know, that's sort of his job. Kyle, help me out here. Was this a sketch? Is this real?
I don't know if I can. I don't think there's any help for this particular thing. We just get into crazy, crazy weeds, and I don't want to entertain it as much. I mean, I just know that,
how do we get
I
here?
I know this stuff is all over the internet as far as misinformation.
It's on the, yeah, look it up. It's on the internet.
That,
like the guy
that
said.
Is precious. It's like at first you think, oh, there's idiots aren't they don't know, they're Luddites, they're not using technology. Here's what happens when they start using technology. Oh, they find stuff.
Yeah.
They do their research.
But
good God, to our detriment collectively.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just that one protest and get together there.
Well, that's the thing. It's to our detriment. You know, if they were going out there and getting run over by cars and just hurting themselves, okay, I'd be upset. But if that's, you know, like the woman said, everyone's responsible for themselves. Okay, but it doesn't work that way with a virus. You're responsible for other people. If you cough in someone's face or even in a room and refuse to use a mask, you could be spreading the virus and infecting more people. And what do we have? 70,000 deaths. We've just crossed 70,000 deaths in this country alone. Over a quarter million in the world. I mean, what do you need? What do you need to prove that this is something serious? It's not a political debate. This is a health matter. You don't know better than the people who devote their lives to this sort of thing. So and instead of politicizing it and saying, I'm not going to listen to a Democrat, why don't you listen to a scientist? Listen to a doctor? Listen to somebody who spends every waking hour studying this and trying to come up with a solution? Those people deserve your respect, your thanks, and at the very, very least, follow their guidelines. But instead, you got all these morons running around in the street and morons in power, too, that are doing the same thing. You know, New Zealand did it right. If you're looking for a model on how to deal with COVID-19, look to New Zealand. Because they basically, they closed off early, they did a lot of testing, they followed up, and guess what? The virus is practically non-existent there. You can control this. You can contain it. If you do it right. Now, of course, a country the size of the United States, it's a lot harder. That's why those early days were so important. Those early days were incredibly important. We didn't take it seriously enough. The people in charge did not do their jobs. We'll deal with that in the future. But right now, we have to deal with the virus and how to fix that, because we're in a much worse shape than we could have been. And the way you address it is certainly not by pretending things are normal. But the virus doesn't care. It doesn't care that you've had good numbers. It's still the same virus. And if you start acting the way you did before all this happened, it's just going to go right back to those skyrocketing numbers. And you see that there are people that know this is going to happen. Trump is now saying 3,000 deaths a day. Expect that. You know what he's doing? He's basically running that up the flagpole and seeing who salutes, who falls into line. Say, yeah, you know what? I can live with 3,000 deaths a day.
Yeah,
as long as I get my job back, as long as I have my, I can walk down the street and sneeze at will.
Yeah, it's real-time polling as to what that threshold is from the populace, or just at least enough of it for him to proceed with the whatever corrupt election he has in store for himself.
And he's not the only one. There are so many people here who are so cold and callous. It's sickening.
And think about all of the essential workers that are going to have to deal with the throngs of people reusing those public services. So instead of public transportation being used primarily for healthcare workers and people that really must be working to keep society functioning even when we're inside, now they have idiots who are running on bad information and or conspiracy or whatever they're convinced of that makes them right for not taking enough precautions. Will invariably create a large toll of casualties and cases, or at least a spike, as those services begin to create a lot of traffic. I mean, air travel, that kind of thing. I mean, they're still imposing. I think they're starting mask policies. I read on one particular airline, not until like after the first week of this month. So they still haven't really enforced that across the board. They don't have that guidance, but there's, again, this will to reopen. But as I said, when a lot of bus drivers get sick, or a lot of those essential infrastructure workers who would be there for healthcare workers if the numbers were really high and we were all back quarantined again, they have a reduction in their ranks. And is there enough service when you need it for essential people if we were to go back into some kind of stay-at-home guidance? So it just the haphazardness, it just is really going to be a source of a lot of pain, I think, if we're not careful.
Yeah, and
even Cuomo was talking today about how he hadn't emphasized masks enough.
True, and that's a failing on all sides from the beginning. I remember seeing this in the early days where there were people on television saying, act like you have the virus, but don't wear a mask. But if you have the virus, you should wear a mask. So it wasn't clear. And finally they got it right and said, okay, you know what, everyone should wear a mask because that helps prevent you from spreading the virus if you have it. It doesn't help you not get the virus. It's not meant for that.
Even seeing that the healthcare workers, because they don't have hoods and full protective equipment,
right,
they were doubling up and using masks. And you know, the argument was there's a high viral load and they're around during various procedures, intubations, et cetera, et cetera. Still, that to my mind was warning enough. Like, okay, if that's what they need to sort of survive environments that are really full of this particular microbe, well, what are we doing in situations where we're all out amongst one another? I mean, that combined with the asymptomatic spread really convinced me that, okay, well, if healthcare workers are requiring this PPE, we should all be thinking very carefully about the kinds of exposure we have inadvertently without, you know, unbeknownst. And then lo and behold, it progresses and that then becomes the guidance that, oh yeah, there's asymptomatic spread where people who don't have symptoms are still highly contagious.
Right.
Highly contagious. I mean, that's the thing that I think people keep forgetting. That was the misnomer with it being flu-like, et cetera, et cetera. It just, it's a terrible time to, as we've been talking about, entertain really, really uninformed or misinformed attitudes just because there's a lot of hurt. We're all hurting a lot. We're all questioning what our lives are going to be like, what our careers are going to be like. We all want to do fun things, you know, and enjoy the weather and so on and so forth. But
That's the thing. You can enjoy the weather. You can do a lot of things. We've been doing that and without putting people at risk, without breaking any of the guidelines that have been issued. And we understand there's a sacrifice involved here. And if you're too selfish to have any kind of sacrifice in your lifestyle in order to keep other people alive, what kind of person are you? And what are we encouraging here? I mean, just hearing what is being said in leadership roles, governors and presidents. This idiot, Chris Christie, you hear what he said? Of course,
no.
Everybody wants to save every life they can, but the question is, towards what end, ultimately? God, this guy's a jerk. He's basically saying that you know, he's embracing the 3,000 a day number. 3,000 people dying a day. Think about that. Just think about that. Don't become numb to it. And when asked whether people will be able to accept reopening for that kind of a price, 3,000 people a day, what do you think he said? Said they're going to have to. They're going to have to accept that. These people are damn murderers because that is what they are doing. They're encouraging you to act in an unsafe manner so that you can put yourself at risk, so that the economy can open up again for however brief period of time for them to make some kind of profit before it comes shattering down again.
No, that's a big one. They are listening to the evils of business way, way more so than the guidance of scientists and healthcare workers. That is completely clear with those kinds of recommendations.
I'm trying to think, what can we do to hurt them? Because they respond. They respond to crowds of people being angry and even violent. They do. Unfortunately, you can't really do that in this situation because, you know, it's dangerous. It's dangerous not because of violence, but because of the disease. And people are smart enough not to engage in that kind of a thing, except for the idiots that are out there on the street saying that they want their jobs back and they don't care if they die. You know, and so those people get listened to because they're chanting the loudest, and everybody else is at home doing the smart thing and not being heard. So how do you become heard? How do you reach out to these people that are doing stupid things, people in charge that are doing stupid things, and get them to fear you? Because that's the only thing it's going to take. You need to make them afraid. You need to make them realize if they don't do what you say, they are going to hurt. They are going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose everything. That's what you have to do. That's the only language they understand. That's how the Chris Christies and the Donald Trumps of the world finally fall into line. Otherwise, we're just going to keep sitting back in amazement saying, I can't believe they just said that. I can't believe this is a new policy. While 3,000 people a day die. It's not acceptable. Should never, ever accept that.
They're basically in campaign mode. I mean, this is window dressing so that they can continue to rally and act as though, and put this behind them, as though the consequences aren't going to become completely evident. I mean, we're still short on PPE. We're still way short on testing. We're still, for the most part, unable to open things like restaurants and bars and places where people gather at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally a play against what the people actually want. We've talked about, I think in the last week or week before, there was some polling about it, and most people do not want to return until there is some viable therapy, really widespread testing and tracking, and some you know, really good hopes in some of these vaccine trials. We're not there yet, and even the administration, I think this week, said their numbers are going to be double the deaths by June.
Yeah.
That's basically writing off May. It's like May is going to get crazy. It may, you know, but we'll take the ebb and flow, first, second, third, all these waves.
But
and then,
if you're saying something like that, how in any scenario can you envision opening things up and acting like it's normal? You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me that they would actually do this. I don't know. You know, when it does reach that horrible stage where more people are dying than ever, will people say then, you know what, you're wrong, or will we somehow make it even worse? I don't even know anymore. I don't recognize this country. I don't recognize the people. Listen to this. In a city called Stillwater in Oklahoma, there's a rule, an emergency order, that says people need to wear face masks whenever possible. Businesses required patrons to cover their faces to combat the spread of coronavirus. Well, that resulted in threats of physical violence. There's one threat of violence using a firearm. And the mayor softened the rule to encourage, not require, face coverings because of the threat of violence. Because people are so violently opposed to doing what is safe that they actually are threatening violence, and the people running that city are so wishy-washy that they're influenced by those threats of violence. So that's the point I'm trying to make. Okay, so do we say, hey, mayor, we're going to kick your ass if you don't require people to wear face masks, you idiot. All right, and if we make a convincing case, will they see our way? Is that the only way to get through to people these days? Because science doesn't seem to work anymore.
Yeah, that fear of having some kind of retribution, I just don't understand how that's acceptable. You would never accept that from an opposing party, and yet somehow that's the way we're going to do to convey things to our leadership.
No, there are always going to be lunatics out there threatening all kinds of things. You don't take them seriously, and you punish them if they do something stupid. Look at Canada. They had a mass shooting with one of those semi-automatic or quarter-automatic, whatever you call them. I always use the wrong term. I don't care. It's not about the phrasing, what particular type of gun it is, but they used a particular type of gun, and the Prime Minister banned that type of gun. Period. Done. Just like that. Why can't we do things like this? Instead, the idiocy just grows every time we do something stupid. We encourage more of it. Do you think Canada's a bad place? It's funny because I saw somewhere that a bunch of Second Amendment zealots, and I put Second Amendment in quotes because I think it's being distorted, but the Second Amendment zealots said, well, you know what, we're never going to visit Canada then. And people in Canada say, wow, this keeps getting better and better. Now we're not going to get gun nuts over here too. Wow. Thank you. Why can't we actually stop worrying about the lunatics and start doing what's right? Why can't we do that? I'm so sick of hearing this ultra right-wing paranoia and hatred and fear,
mistrust,
and ignorance,
and mistrust and misplaced blame,
uh-huh.
Constant playing the victim,
yeah,
and having to blame all of these different things, and
that's the thing, they're trying to blame China now, Trump and his friends. It's funny because the intelligence community says this came from a market. But Trump is saying, no, I have evidence that it came from a lab, even though nobody else knows about this except for people that are in his circle.
Yeah.
He's trying to basically make it into a nationalistic thing instead of something that happens to the human race every now and then. It's unfortunate, it's a tragedy, but it there's a history of this kind of a thing. It's not because of a government, it's not because of a nationality, it's because this is what happens. So you see this kind of thing where you try to attach blame and it doesn't fix the problem. The early days, Trump wants all kinds of credit for closing the borders, but he didn't close the borders. He only closed the borders to certain types of people. He just used his hatred. And the virus doesn't know the difference between a Chinese national and an American who's coming from China. So if you ban Chinese nationals from coming into the country, but you let all the Americans that are in the same exact place in without any restrictions, you're not accomplishing anything.
Yeah, that was where New Zealand went, right?
Yeah, they basically, if you're a New Zealand national coming back to New Zealand, you have to be in quarantine just like anybody else. And they're not saying, if you're Muslim, you're not allowed in here. No, they're not saying that. Anybody is treated the same way. That is how you win. That's how you get a handle on this thing.
And because he got that wrong, now, domestically, we have orders for different states. Now you're required to quarantine if you go to Alaska. You're required to quarantine if you go to Hawaii. Because we didn't get that right here.
He didn't get that right.
He didn't. I'm sorry.
Every one of these deaths is on his head in my
opinion.
Fully
on him. Fully on him. But
why do you think?
He's touting it as an accomplishment. It's not.
I'm looking at the numbers right now. It's 70,847 deaths. The entire world, 256,239, of which our 70,000 is a part of. So why? Why is ours such a big percentage of that? You know, it started in China. But they only had 3,000-4,000 deaths. They got a handle on it fairly quickly. Other places, it stopped after. I mean, some places were much worse than others. Italy, England. But why are we so high? Because we really, really didn't get this right. And we need to accept that. We need to deal with that fact.
And blame this idiot fully, because he's trying to wash his hands of it. And distance himself because it's such a royal screw-up.
But we've known he's an idiot for all this time. We need to blame ourselves for allowing him to continue doing what he does. You know, there are ways of stopping this, and we have not been very effective at implementing any of those methods. And that goes for the Democratic Party, that goes for other leaders, that goes for people who just vote in a very stupid way.
And the kid gloves with that segment of the voting populace has got to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're passionate about various things, but they've proven that they do not really have the judgment that we desperately need. It is not something to follow. It has gotten us this far, as has been said.
We only have an hour.
Yeah, go on. What do you got?
Well, remember this top vaccine official who was removed from his post last month. He said today that he was reassigned to a less prestigious role because he tried, get this, to prioritize science and safety over political expediency. And he raised health concerns over a drug repeatedly pushed by President Trump and other administration officials as a possible cure for coronavirus. I still don't know what was going on with that. Trump, like, stood to make money off of this or something, so he was willing to push it on people and regardless of what the effect was. This guy, a scientist, is actually telling the truth, and he gets punished for it. He gets punished for telling the truth in one of the most important crises that we have ever faced. His name is Rick Bright. Portrays himself in the complaint as one of the administration's health officials trying to sound the alarm about the virus as early as January. He said he called for the rapid development of treatments and vaccines as well as the stockpiling of additional N95 masks and ventilators. And you know how that went.
I'm so mad there aren't gloves just because I want to, like, work on the car and stuff. It's not even, like, the glove shortage. I mean, that's the luxury I have.
Yeah.
It's like, we're not going to see N95 masks like you used to see for a very long time.
The only thing that's changed about COVID-19 is your chance of getting it. That's a quote from the Atlanta mayor. Yeah, Atlanta mayor issues warning to crowds gathering as Georgia reopens and coronavirus keeps spreading. Yeah, the numbers in Georgia, way up. Who knew? How? How is this possible?
How many Fridays ago was that? Was that last Friday?
They went back to normal, and for some reason the numbers are going up.
And that's what we saw in the state anyway, and even in New York. I mean, it was a wild weekend. People were out.
We were in Port Jefferson the other day.
We drove through it.
And people were being idiots. People were being big, fat idiots. I cannot believe how stupid people are being. Hanging out in crowds, not wearing masks. What, do you think you're somehow immune from this? You think that you're better than the virus? Well, you're better than the virus, sure, but you're not stronger than the virus. It's going to catch up to you if you don't take precautions. There's only so much you can do. I don't know. And then, you know, I'm seeing stories about other parts of the country where things are always a little bit worse. Family charged in murder of security guard after he dared to tell them they needed to wear a mask or masks to walk into a store. Shot to death. Security guards being attacked all over the place for daring to tell people this is a requirement. Do you see this one? This guy is a video of this. This guy walked into a Dollar Tree store I believe this is in Michigan. Yeah, Michigan. That's where we saw the first convention of idiots. In northern Oakland County, they say allegedly, but there's video of it, so I'm gonna remove the allegedly. He wiped his nose on the shirt of a female clerk.
How do you even get that kind of proximity to?
He walked over to her.
Be so disgusting.
She said he needed to wear a mask to enter the store, and he walked up to her and said, "Oh, this is a mask." Wiped his nose on it on her shirt. And then was loud and belligerent in the store. I hear they finally caught him and arrested him. You know what? You should be locked away until the virus goes away because obviously you can't handle it and you're a danger to the people around you. Let's empty the prisons of all the nonviolent offenders and refill them with people who don't seem to understand how to keep a virus from spreading and are basically disobeying every single sensible rule there is. That's what I'd like to see. Keep those people in their own little colony. I mean, God help them, what's going to happen to them. And you know what? That doesn't work because there are going to be doctors that have to deal with that. And they're the ones that are going to be hurt.
And again, people taking precautions are people, those of us not wantonly exposing ourselves in this way, are still getting it. And even people being incredibly careful.
Yeah.
So it really isn't a time to be so cavalier and righteous.
At both stations, BAI and USB, we've had people who have tested positive, and this is after going to a skeleton crew. Now, can you imagine if we were just treating things like everything is normal? It would be like a nursing home. It would be a horrible outbreak.
There still are a lot of in-person shows, more than I would have imagined.
Oh, there should never be more than one person in the whole facility.
Oh, that's
at one
true.
Time.
Yeah.
That at least that's my hope. But that is the smart way of dealing with it. And if you just pretend that somehow it doesn't affect you, you will pay the price severely. And we're learning that every single day. And apparently, we're going to learn a lot more when this new goal of 3,000 deaths a day. And I call it a goal because the only way things could get that bad is if you put in an effort to not do the smart thing. We cannot accept that. We cannot accept those numbers. Those are our friends. Those are our relatives. Those are your grandparents. Basically, people like Chris Christie and Donald Trump saying it's okay. They can die. You know, comparing this to World War II, man, what an insult to anybody who has served in the military. To say that dying from a disease is serving your country. like fighting an enemy in a just war. No, it's preventable. Just like any war should be preventable, but this is very preventable. You do not have to die from this. You do not have to get sick from this. There are smart people that can help you stay safe. You just have to listen to them.
And a lot of people are providing relief. A lot of people are forgiving payments that are due. There is a lot of effort. Car manufacturers and repair shops across the board are giving deals. There's all kinds of support for people that are going through, because so many people are going through this. And I feel like if you have the luxury to continue to work at home, if we can continue to broadcast remotely, we should take advantage of that because we're continuing to help.
Yeah. I think we're better off for having learned how to do these things.
Yeah, I feel like we can set up all kinds of creative things, but that's not the point. We adapted. The station, WUSB, adapted.
Yes.
And we've been providing news. We've been providing resources.
Dare I say, not only have we adapted, we've improved.
Yeah.
Because what we are broadcasting is so relevant. People are talking about this. People are opening up to the listeners. We're sharing public affairs, broadcasting, and informing the public. And that's what a radio station is. And I think a lot of people are realizing, wow, it's really good to have a local radio station. Yeah. So, well, I know we're not doing the radiothon, but you still can donate at WUSB.FM. So please do, because, boy, this place is important. And so is any community radio station that that serves the public.
Yeah, I was hearing a show yesterday that was a couple students, and they were talking about what it's like to be remote learning.
I want to know, because everybody's got a story.
Yeah, it was really hilarious. I mean, I don't want to blow up anybody's program or attendance record, but they were talking about, you know, skipping Zoom classes, and I mean, just
oh yeah, get them in trouble.
It's just how terrible it is to try to keep up with all these obligations remotely, and how different it is. And it was really cool to hear and have DJs giving their perspective. We've heard from so many different departments and musical perspectives as this thing has gone on,
mm-hmm.
and getting an update just from the campus and from our greater WUSB community has been vital. And it's I think, as you said, it's improved the communication,
yeah.
really amongst a lot of the programmers, and I think built a much more reliable and resilient community radio group. And I'm just really, really proud of how everyone really rose to this occasion. And we're going to continue to provide perspective and report and keep a distance, because we can make that sacrifice. It's not easy. It's not the best. It's not ideal. I miss the studio. I really do. I mean, I miss being able to see people and catch up as we go by. But
I miss the parking lot.
That's the thing.
I miss the parking lot. Parking the car in the parking lot. And, yeah, I miss
that.
Well,
it was always cool. Yeah, you know, seeing...
And the pathway, before you cross the street, that particular stretch of the pathway, I miss that. I don't miss the other part.
Yeah, sometimes they'd landscape and the geese. There's
the
always
geese. Yeah, and that's the thing. Nature is doing just fine, thank you very much. We see more wildlife now than we've ever seen. Now, imagine how this could be, what kind of a disaster this actually could be. It could be, you know, some idiot, one of the same idiots that's saying it's okay for 3,000 people a day to die. They could have nuked someplace and gotten nuked in exchange. And the entire environment could be screwed up as a result. But it's not. It's not like that. You can still go outside. You can still breathe in the air. You can see the stars. You just have to be smart about it. And that has not been taken away from you. So don't be angry. Be happy that you're around, that you can get through this, that you will live to tell this story to your children and their children, and that you will be looked upon as a model for future generations, a model of strength. That's what we're being tested at. It's got nothing to do with politics. It's got nothing to do with one side or another. There's only one side here. Unless you're taking the side of the virus, there's only one side if you're a human being and want to survive.
I read a really good comment in the Times today. It was talking about mask wearing in general, and that it, even if you're not, if you feel it's absurd to wear a mask in public, that it's a sign of social solidarity. And I really think that's something we need to keep remembering, how much people have done to get us to this point. And I think it's to have really misinformed stuff become the noise that overpowers all the efforts others have made, whether it's, you know, building things or donating organizing things. Like, those people really deserve thanks and you know, shouldn't be drowned out by stupidity. In fact, we people who have been paying attention and following instructions and doing our best need to call that stuff, you know, for what it is, which is really, really stupid. And I'm not saying we need counter protests, but it is so foolish to put all of this in jeopardy once again.
And I don't mean to give them more attention than they deserve, but unfortunately, what these people are saying is being taken seriously by people in control, in charge, and we need to stop that. Those people need to be stopped. And if they do violent things, they need to be punished for those violent things. And if people do irresponsible things, they need to be removed from those positions so they don't do irresponsible things anymore. Science has to win here if we're going to survive, and we need to take a very strong stand on that. Let's not worry about being fair to everybody, because people who are idiots and who are wrong and who are leading us into death and disease, they don't deserve to be taken seriously. They are wrong. It's easy to prove.
I will tell my ancestors one way or another that I called out virus deniers.
Look at this on TV. China calls Secretary of State Pompeo a liar and despicable after Wuhan lab comments, where they're accusing them of starting the virus in the lab. And you know
I agree
with China. In fact, I trust China a hell of a lot more than I trust our own administration right now. And I do not trust China at all. So, yeah,
I'm fully
do the math.
That statement you read earlier about the contradictory comments from the guidance from the White House versus the administration's messaging being completely at odds. I mean, I think of the different military institutions, the Navy ship, all these, and that captain, Captain Cozier, they all have been taking their orders, but doing everything they can to protect the institutions that they're tasked
and
with
being
with,
punished for doing the right
with
thing.
Leading. And as you talked about the infectious diseases person being let go or reprimanded for speaking the truth. I mean, that's the same stuff that we saw early on in China with doctors being told to not make, you know, damaging comments and so forth.
I'm seeing another headline saying the coronavirus task force is going to be disbanded this month. What in God's name is wrong with these people? The White House wants to disband the coronavirus task force.
That's what I'm saying.
How is this even possible?
No, it's that backing away because it is.
But they're saying 3,000 people a day are going to die, and they're going to disband the task force that tells us how to deal with this.
And they're going to spend 8 months talking about how great a job they did. It's utter balderdash.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And it's time for our regular sustaining feature, Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I go back in time. Oh, if only we could stay back in time. And see an Oscar-winning film from a particular year before we move on to the next year. And we are at the year 1972. Can I just say, 1972, I looked this up, folks. Billboard's 100 top songs. I think I know every single song on that list. And they're all good. Well, most of them. And it was just such an amazing look back. The Snicky of 1972, for me, anyway.
I'm wondering what year. So, yeah, you were like probably mid-teens?
It doesn't matter how old I was.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact is, I was listening to the radio.
No, there's years when, you know, formidable years, when you're starting to listen to more music. Not your parents' music, but, like, music.
There was a lot of variety, too. There was, you know, a country song, there was soul, pop, there was all kinds of different music.
Don't say the D word.
No, disco hadn't been invented yet.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so our 1972 film is The Godfather. Wow, The Godfather. Now that is a film. In fact, many people have said it's the most perfect film.
It's a really, really cool film. I'd never, ever, ever seen it.
You never saw The Godfather?
Never saw it.
Wow. Don't you love when you say you didn't see something and somebody repeats it as if questioning whether or not you are right in what you didn't see? Like, you never saw The Godfather? And you're supposed to answer that.
I never saw The Godfather.
You know what? You're right. I did see The Godfather.
You know what? Actually, I did see The God. No, I didn't
well,
see The
well,
Godfather
now you
ever.
Did, though. But you did see it.
Yeah.
And were you in awe?
I was rapt with rapt attention, rapt with every line. I was hanging at the edge of my seat, just completely engrossed.
Well, it's an engrossing film.
Francis Ford Coppola.
That's right. That's right. You know, one thing that I learned from seeing the director commentary and various other things is what a struggle it is for somebody to make a film when you're dealing with a studio. Because they would question everything, every decision, every casting choice, and just making his life miserable. Let the guy do his work. Let the artist be an artist. Instead, you have the head of Gulf Western telling him that Marlon Brando cannot be in this film. How dare you? How dare you? You don't know what you're talking about. I feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over again. But
and this is at a
stupid
time,
people just they exist everywhere.
And it was at a time when like independent film was not really a way to go. It wasn't an option to get out there, to
no,
get in theaters and widely seen.
This was a fairly low-budget film, a fairly alternative. It may seem like a mainstream film now, but it was definitely something different. And Francis Ford Coppola was just about 30 years old. He was a young guy, and this was one of his first projects, so he had a lot to prove. But
it's based on a novel.
Yeah, it is.
Mario Puzo is the author of
yeah.
the, I'm sorry, book, but he co-wrote it with Francis Ford Coppola.
Can I just
screenplay.
There's another review. We're not the only people doing this, by the way, but there's another review that you might have heard out there about The Godfather that I think might speak to some of the same things that we're talking about. Let's take a listen to this.
I did not care for The Godfather.
What?
Did not care for The Godfather.
How can you even say that, Dad?
Didn't like it.
Peter, it's so good. It's like the perfect movie.
This is what everyone always says. Whenever they say, oh,
Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, you never see... Robert Duvall!
Fine actor. Did not like the movie.
Why not?
Did not... Couldn't get into it.
Explain yourself. What didn't you like about it?
It insists upon itself, Lois.
What?
It insists upon itself.
What does that even mean?
Because it has a valid point to make. It's insisted.
It takes forever getting in. And you spend like 6.5 hours, and then, you know, I can't even get through. I can't even finish a movie. I've never even seen the ending.
You've never seen the ending?
Well, how can you say you don't like it if you haven't even given it a chance?
I agree with Joey. It's not really fair.
I have tried on three separate occasions to get through it, and I get to the scene where all the guys are sitting around on the easy chairs.
Yeah, it's a great scene. I love that scene.
It's noted in every annal.
I have no idea what they're talking about. It's like they're speaking a different language. That's where I lose interest when
you know
I go away.
They're
speaking Italian!
The language they're speaking is a language of subtlety, something you don't understand.
I love the money pit. That is my answer to that statement.
Exactly.
Well, there you go.
Whatever.
I like that movie, too.
Actually, I like The Money Pit as well, but never mind. That's not the point. Yeah, so a lot of people talk about this. It's one of those films that you just have to see. It's about,
set in 1945 New York City.
That's right, yes.
And it starts with a wedding, and it's basically a Don receiving all of these family members and new family members, and is, as per tradition, they're asking favors of him or otherwise paying their respects and staying in his good graces to whatever ends.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we quickly learn that anything is possible when you have the protection of the Don, of the Godfather himself, and you see the interplay of the family and the consigliere and how they basically have a transition of power and how those various promises and requests are met or otherwise not met.
Yeah, there's all these subtleties, and you really have to see it more than once, I think. to appreciate them all. There's so many little phrases. Like, do you know "bada bing" comes from that? The phrase, whatever that even means. But "bada bing," you've heard that said. Right?
Yeah.
You don't know what it means, but it comes from that film because one guy happens to say "bada bing" just randomly, in one exchange. Little things like that. They attach themselves to our culture.
They're references.
And there's all kinds of imitations that have happened over the years of various key moments, and it's, you know, as far as the way it's filmed, the continuity, it's close to perfection. I think it really is.
Yeah, great storytelling. A lot of I always go to the cars, the vehicles. There's great Cadillacs and. Mm-hmm. It's really gorgeous. A lot of location shots. I think they did Spain and a couple of different key places.
It was supposed to be. I think they went to Sicily.
Was it Sicily?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought they had.
They might have filmed in Spain as well.
I think there was, but regardless, it had just really everywhere it counted. They were. Just doing top-notch outdoor as well as indoor photography and costuming. It was an amazing assemblage of work, and I understand why it's so renowned and why people reference it so much.
It was 3 hours long, but it really flew by.
Yeah, I was expecting an intermission. I think we stopped a little bit through, but it
we stopped where an intermission would have been.
Right, about our halfway through, and wow. A lot of action.
Yeah.
Some shootouts.
Yeah, some shooting. Yeah, there's a bit of that.
A lot of Long Island references. That's cool.
Someone gets shot on the causeway, which I think is Jones Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more we could say. If it feels like we're not being specific enough, it's because we don't have enough time to really get into all the all the details.
Wait, I was just getting warmed up.
Yeah, I know. We could go on for another hour just about The Godfather. We can talk about it more, but that's it for this week as far as, films of the year that was. And we're moving on to 1973. But you know what?
Not this week.
This song is from 1972. It's from a guy named Mano de Bongo. And tragically, he recently died of coronavirus. So all of that kind of lines up to be our outro for this week. In fact, we tried to play this on the other show, but something didn't work, right? So we weren't able to. So now we are. Makusa by Mano de Bongo. I remember this as a kid, 1972. I remember hearing this. This is one of those songs, one of those amazing songs that came out that year. And that's going to just about do it for us tonight as we count down to 7 o'clock. Have you been going outside and yelling and screaming and blowing horns and doing all the things to thank the first responders and the medical staff?
I try, but it really has fallen off. I'm a little disappointed. I had a couple more pots and pans.
Hey, it's okay to shoot off a bottle rocket every now and then.
All right. I mean, I'll order more if people get into it, but...
How are you going to order bottle rockets?
I don't know. Where do you even get them? I'm running out. I was running out. I was celebrating and giving thanks. And
I'll tell you where those bottle rockets came from. When we filmed Freedom Downtime in 1998, we drove through Missouri and we bought some there. And this tells you how often I set off bottle rockets. I've had them ever since. And so we've been able to light one off every now and then.
Well,
how old they are.
Well, I found them under like a stack of papers, and I figured we should put them in this old ammo container, you know, military metal box. And then from there, I've slowly picked various bottle rockets to shoot off. But we're almost out, so we'll have to get more maybe for 4th of July.
Yeah, if we make it that far. All right, well, hopefully we didn't depress people too badly. It's my wish that we wake people up and get people motivated and inspired and appreciative of each other and yourselves. That's the important thing. Write to us. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you have to say. Your words matter. otw@2600.com. Have you never written to us before? Then you're the person we're talking to right now. Write to us. otw@2600.com. It's amazing how email works. It'll get to us.
Even, you know what? use our secure drop. 2600.com/securedrop.
Okay, yeah. That's another way to get to us.
Maybe you want to be anonymous for some reason.
You can do skywriting. We see that sometimes.
Semaphore flags and smoke signals. We respond to those as well.
Hey, look, Finn's at the door. He's coming up next.
Ah, oh, Finn. I miss Finn.
Yeah, unfortunately, his door is far away, so we can't actually see the door. But he is there, and he will be doing a show because he's as awesome as everybody else at WUSB, Stony Brook. And there's your legal ID.
I'm listening. I'm going to listen to that.
All right.
Sure.
We're going to listen to the end of Mano de Bongo. And
shout-outs to Frank.
Shout-outs to Frank for making it all possible. And right afterwards, we'll do a little bit of celebration, and then it's on to Finn. Stay tuned. Good night.
This is Robert Klein speaking to you from WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Get me out of here.